Hello and welcome to the Home Improvement Show. I'm Sue Smith, and this show is really about Walter Assey, who joins me in studio. Good morning, Walter.
Hello. Good morning.
Walter is the president of Renovco, a longtime contractor, and he is here to answer your questions about improving your home, repairing your home, questions you have about things that you have bought for your home that maybe aren't working properly. You can ask Walter, 514-790-0800. You can certainly text us. We like to hear from you. But what we really like is when you call us at 514-790-0800, because that way Walter can ask follow-up questions. 514-790-0800. And Walter, I hate to start on a bad topic. We're going to talk about common mistakes in renovation projects. But as you know, we've been talking about mice for the last couple of weeks. And you told me about that plug-in thing last time.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I don't know where it has been all my life. Is it a new invention?
Couple of years. Everything I tell you usually should be amazing.
Yes, I have noticed that, Walter. I have. But not everything pertains to my particular case. But this did.
Yeah, no, it's been a couple of years and it does work. It really does. Yeah.
Yeah, I love it because as I have been discussing on the air, we did have callers calling about mice. It wasn't just me talking about mice. But I have a mouse problem and I've been live trapping them and that is useless. But the because what it is you plug it in, you said it's a frequency, right? Mm-hmm. And then there's a little like an ultraviolet blue light also that goes down.
Correct.
Anyway, it's a wonderful invention. Thank you, Walter.
Always a pleasure. Anything.
I know, like $60 for six, too.
Anytime you need great ideas, you just approach.
Okay. All right. I'll call you on that. All right, 514-790-0800 if you want to ask Walter a question. And I see we already have calls in. And that's a good idea. If you think you might want to call, get in early because what always happens is we have tons of callers at the end and then we don't get to get to them. So let's do that. Okay, 514-790-0800. Walter, you want to talk about some common mistakes in renovation projects.
Yes, and this is really... you know, it's a good subject to talk about because we see it often that people spend a lot of money and then they spend more money because they badly planned the renovation. So, I mean, any renovation, I'm not talking about a paint job or anything like that. I'm talking more about like if you're finishing a basement, a kitchen, or a major renovation. If you don't have a master plan, even if you're doing it in phases, phase one, phase two, phase three, because you have budget restraints or timing restraints, always have a master plan. And it's shocking to see how many people venture into renovations and they don't even have a plan. The plan is really a roadmap for you, your contractor, your subcontractor, and whoever, your designer, whoever is involved in your project to assist you and guide you through the whole process. Not only that, it will also permit you to plan deeper and see things that you didn't necessarily see in your head, if you wish. Example, I mean, if you are doing an electrical plan, okay, or you're doing a plumbing plan, in a plumbing plan, you will label all your shutoff valves or your floor drains, your access to the backwater valves. All of these things that usually, you know, if you don't tell, and specifically when you're hiring targeted contractors like subs, framing guys, you know, if you don't point necessarily to him that please give me access here, for him, it's not my job. The plumber will come afterwards and he will make his own access.
All right.
But if you label it and you kind of, you know, you have to try to dumb it down as much as possible to avoid mistakes, right? So more details you give, the better it is. And you will be amazed how much money you save in the process. Mm-hmm. So.
But when you talk about a plan, it sounds great, but I mean, how evolved does the plan have to be? Like, do you have to, for example, well, okay, I was going to say, for example, a kitchen renovation, but I'm guessing, you know, you should try to use a professional and they will help you draw things. But like, is it a drawing? Is it just a linear thing? Like first we do plumbing, then we do electrics. Like how involved is the plan have
to be? I mean, look, the more involved it is, the better it is if you are, especially if you're acting like your own project manager. So
right.
What you want to do is you want to go to work, give the plan to the electrical guy, the electrician, and then you know, leave knowing that he's going to put all the spots you want and all of it. So the more details, the better. Depending on how complicated or sophisticated your project is. But, you know, so I mean, hiring someone to kind of bring your vision on paper and to see it in a 3D modeling makes a huge difference. Like if you're doing a kitchen and you're doing it on a 2D, you're not a visual person. You're not in that business. You're not going to understand necessarily how things are going to look like. Mm-hmm. You may think you understood. So you want to make it as realistic as possible.
Yeah.
Even in, you know, nice advanced softwares that we use, we even insert the colors of your choice. So it will give you a good mood board that you can look. You say, if I'm going to go in the grays, if I'm going to go in the... And sometimes, you know, you have 2-3 ideas in mind and you don't know which way to go. So once you put everything together, that will also give you a clearer a path going forward.
Right.
Plus, it will save you money. So that money that you pay up front, most people don't do plans, not because they don't want to, it's because they don't want to pay for them, right?
Yes.
But you have no idea how much that saves you in the whole process. Mm-hmm. It saves you a lot. And, you know, yesterday I was in a project where, you know, the people took the time to install backflow valves, okay? But they built a subfloor on top, and
covering them basically.
No access. Oh, yeah. Another client right before had built a staircase on top of their sump pump pit and their backflow valve. So how do you clean that? How do you maintain that?
Yeah.
How do you repair that? Nobody knows, right? And they got flooded. That's exactly what happened. They actually got flooded for lack of maintenance, mm-hmm. right? But that planning, I mean, I fault in a way the contractor that saw what he was doing, but you know, a lot of contractors, they follow orders, right? So if the client
tells them,
I want the, yeah, that's right. Like, no, if it doesn't make sense, stand up and say, no, this doesn't make sense. I don't want to block this. It's not because c'est pas my job. It is your job.
But I can see, I'm laughing because your face, and I don't know if listeners can hear your voice. You must have seen some crazy stuff because you're just like, how does anyone do that? But I get that you have to have a plan if you're doing a kitchen, maybe even a bathroom. But like if you're doing a basement, I don't know if I would think of doing a plan.
It is actually, for me, even more important to do
a plan. So who would you even use? Would your contractor do the plan, or would you get a designer?
Well, you see, so a good contractor typically will offer that service in the planning stages, because planning is half the success of your renovation, right? So he would want that plan more than you.
Right.
He doesn't like it doesn't make sense to make decisions on the fly. First of all, decisions on the fly, you're very rushed to do them more often than not. And you didn't have enough time to think about them. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you're, for example, building a bedroom, OK, what kind of bed are you going to have? Are it going to be, if it's a guest bedroom, you want it to be for two people. So the size of the bedroom have to be decided. If you have a queen size bed or a king size bed that you want to put in there, well, the size and the dimension of the bedroom will change. If you're putting sconces, if you're putting plugs, switches, how the layout of the furniture is going to be in the basement. If you, where you're putting your TV, that's, you know, or where you're putting your desk, your computer. So for the electrical portion, it's important. For if you're putting a gym, you measure the gym equipment so you understand what the dimensions need to be. So a good plan also would involve putting an example of the furniture on the plan.
Right, yeah.
Right? So it's a sectional, it's not a sectional. So yeah, in the basement, I find it even more important.
So who does those plans, though? Is it an architect? So, is it a, like, how do you...
So typically a designer will do it, a technologue. You don't need to go with an architect. That's an overkill. So a technologue or a designer. A good designer is always a good thing, because a technologue would not venture into material finishes mm-hmm. and colors.
But a designer might not know backflow and septic.
Well, you don't need to know. What you need to understand is if there is something that I'm hoping they have that general knowledge that if you have a floor drain, you need access. If you have a backflow valve, you need access. Mm-hmm. If you have a sump pump, you need access. So all what you want to label in those, and that's also a good portion of it is homeowner. So you have, not because we've subcontracted the plans to someone that we don't give, you know, our 2 cents. What you want is not for them to have knowledge about it, but understand at least the minimal knowledge that these things have to be accessed, maintained, cleaned, and you know, and always looked after.
All right, you're listening to Walter Assey. This is the Home Improvement Show, 514-790-0800. We're going to go to the calls after this short break, 514-790-0800. Your calls for Walter Assey. Hello and welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. I'm Sue Smith and we're here with Walter Assey, who is the president of Renovco, answering your questions about improving your home, 514-790-0800. That's the number to call, or you can text us as well, but we do like to hear your voice at 514-790-0800. Let's go to the lines. We've got Michael on the line. Hello, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. How are you? What's your question?
Okay, so my question has to do with, do I need or should I replace my Venmar air exchanger? The one that's there right now is about 15 years old. It's making a huge noise. Someone said it might be a bearing. I don't know. I've shut it off. I've subsequently, in the last 5 years, installed a dehumidifier in my basement, which keeps my humidity at 40% almost all year long. So now I'm confronted with, do I replace my Venmar air exchanger, or do I even need it? And some of the new models of air exchangers have HEPA filters as well. So that's my question. Do I need it? And if I do, should I replace it?
What year construction is your house, Michael?
It was built in 1965. It's a brick bungalow. It's a semi-built-up basement. Just one floor, you know, bungalow.
And how drafty or how well insulated your home is?
Well, it's hard for me to say, but we went for one of those government programs to get a heat pump. And the gentleman said that it didn't identify any major insulation problems in the house.
Okay. So, I mean, just like given, if this would have been a 1965 construction that has not been updated to today's standards, then it would have made the house kind of drafty, which is what will save you having an air exchanger. I mean, the more important role of the air exchanger is to bring in fresh air in very hermetic homes that are extremely well-designed and well-insulated. The issue that we have with today's homes is that they're over-insulated, which is a good thing for energy savings, but it's a bad thing for fresh air. So what really at the end of the bottom line, the air exchanger task is to get the fresh air. And having said that, if you are a person that religiously open windows and flush your air on daily basis, you don't need an air exchanger, okay? But if you were to install an air exchanger, what I would install instead is a heat recovery system, because the issue that we've had with air exchangers in the past is that it would draft in colder air, and by the time we heat it, we lose an important amount of energy in the process. So that was, if you want, a defect in the initial models. A heat recovery heats the air before it brings it into your home, so you don't lose that efficiency. Because really, the air exchanger, mostly you're using it in the winter. In the summer, we don't use it as much if we open windows. So that's really where it goes. Where I would also have another thing, just to kind of raise a flag, if you are, just not the idea is to confuse you, but to kind of give you all the options. Venmar is great as a brand. Budget-wise, what I like about them is that their units come previously balanced from the factory. So in the installation, there's very little to do. But they have, in my opinion, a flaw in the design because the core is paper. So everything that is in the core of it is paper, and you cannot replace it. You have to vacuum it. So it makes it a lot harder to maintain long term, right? So if you were to swap it, I would go into a Panasonic model instead because they don't have a paper core. And it's easier to maintain. It lasts a lot longer as well for that reason.
Okay, so you suggest a heat recovery system and a Panasonic model. I think Venmar is also the same as Broan, B-R-O-A-N. Is that the same thing?
I'm not aware of that. But I mean, look, as far as like if you're looking at, you know, different possibilities of brands, you could go into either Renware or Zender as well. I'm just looking at different options that don't have a paper core. That's okay. What really I find the most irritating about the maintenance part of the unit. So okay. these will be the three models I would look into because they're known to have an easier maintenance component, if you wish.
How do you feel about adding a HEPA filter to it?
Look, I'm all for HEPA filters all day long in anything. So that, for me, you're preaching to the choir.
Okay. And I have an estimate. I'm going to reflect on whether I actually need it based on your advice, but I do have an estimate to install an updated air exchanger using existing pipes for about $4,500. Is that accurate, or do you think that...
That sounds to be... you said it for an air exchanger?
Air exchanger, yes.
That sounds to be high.
Okay, good. Well, thank you. That's very helpful. Thank you very much.
My pleasure, Michael. Anytime.
Bye.
All right, that is Michael on the phone line, and you can also call and ask Walter your home improvement questions. 514-790-0800 is the number to call. It's also a text. You can call us at 514-790-0800. We're going to break for news in a second. There's a couple of people on the line, so we're going to ask you to please hold, and we will talk to Walter after the news. I did want to, just before the news, though, Walter, I'm sorry, but we're going to talk about mice again briefly because a whole bunch of people have texted in asking for the name of those mouse traps. I don't know the brand. I just got them at Canadian Tire. You have to go into they have a locked cabinet that they sell them in. But do you have a brand that you recommend?
I mean, to be quite frank, I would not just name one because they all do work. Mm-hmm. There's no magic potion in the brand. It's just a plug-in and just go with any brand.
All right, and they come in packs of 4 and 6 at Canadian Tire, and I don't know anything else from that. But lots of people texting in for that, so highly recommended by Walter and by me.
A lot of exterminators are not going to like us today.
Yeah, well, exterminators can't get rid of mice. We know that. All right, you are listening to the Home Improvement Show with Walter Assey, and we'll continue in a moment. Hello and welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. I'm Sue Smith and Walter Assey is here taking your questions. 514-790-0800 is the number to call. You can text using that same number, 514-790-0800. And let's go to the lines. We have got Luther on the line. Hello,
hello,
Luther.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
I'm good. What's your question for Walter?
Hi, Walter. I live in a dense forested area, the Hudson St. Lazare area, and I'm looking at getting a new roof over the next year possibly, and I was wondering what your opinion was on a steel roof versus a metal roof. And I have forest fire kind of in the back of my mind. I've heard that if you have a metal roof, you may have a better, slightly better chance of protecting your home. Is that true? Do you know anything about that? And can you just tell me your opinion on metal versus steel versus shingle? Thank you.
So, I mean, from from a perspective of a look perspective, a metal roof, I mean, it's a better look in general. So steel tends to be to look a bit more commercial, right? There's, I mean, from a longevity standpoint, they're very similar because, you know, the idea with metal roof is the fact that, you know, it may just makes snow and ice melt a lot quicker. It does not stick. But what's more important is how you prepare the underlayment, if you wish, for the metal or the steel roofs. So I don't really have a preference as far as longevity is concerned. You know, the idea with forest fires, they both have certain fire resistance that is better than shingles, okay? But the problem that you encounter typically in forest fires is the rest of the home. So if, you know, most constructions are made out of wood, so there's not much. You're not going to have much difference between steel and metal, as far as I'm concerned, as far as durability is concerned or fire resistance. I mean, metal roofing in general, you have wide choice of materials. It's 40 to 100 years as far as lifespan. It's energy efficient, it's recyclable. You can have certain metal that is copper or zinc. As far as steel roofing, they're much stronger and impact resistant, right? So if you have a hailstorm, steel is better than metal. It does not puck, okay? It's more cost effective than metal roofing, but it's not as nice, right? And it's easier to find installers in steel than in metal, because it's an easier installation in general. As far as the other thing that you might not like in steel, depending on your roof trusses and structure, steel is heavier than aluminum or metal roof, right? The other issue that you will have with steel, it will corrode and rust a lot faster as well. So it's less suitable for, you know, areas where rust is an issue, where you have, and in a forested area you might have that because of the different vegetation that can come to the roof and damage the paint and everything else, right? So it is a harder choice because they have their pros and cons. But as far as curb appeal and look, for me, it's metal all day long.
Last question. You started your answer with underlayment.
Yeah.
I'm not laying the roof myself. What would my choices be? Like, don't the roofers just put the right product?
Oh, yeah, 100%. What I'm saying is, as far as water tightness, there's not much difference in the comparables, right? So your comparables are not going to... It's not which is better as far as, protection from water. There's not much difference because the preparation is very similar. The differences is what I kind of I'm just trying to make it simpler for you, right? So if yeah. I would have tell you, a metal roof is more watertight than a steel roof, then it becomes an easier decision. But the differences are more on the aesthetics. It's more on the weight as well, and the general maintenance and the look.
Got you. So it's a aluminum roof is the best roof. That's what I'm taking away from it.
I personally prefer that, yes, because it's also lighter, right? Mm-hmm. Again, when we introduce a new material, we always look at the structural elements, and you don't want to add more weight on structure because you don't know how it was designed, especially if it's an older structure. Sometimes older structures were under-designed because simply they were just planning for one type of material that existed then.
Define older? Sorry, Walter? My house is 2010. Is that considered older?
That's a newer model. I don't think the structure is going to be as much of an issue.
Gotcha. I really appreciate you taking the time this morning to explain this to me.
Always a pleasure.
Thank you. Have a nice day.
Thank you, Luther. That is Luther calling in. 790-0800 is the number to call. Let's go to Sean, who has a question about air conditioning. Hello, Sean.
Good morning, Walter. Good morning. I am calling because since June, I lost my AC, and what it was is the coil in the furnace was leaking. I was told I could replace the part. It'd be about $1,500, but based on the new laws or regulations, my 14-year-old external pump, as soon as it dies, I would have to change both my electric box as well as the pump. So I've decided to change the pump. It's a 3-ton pump. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking at really two brands, which is Carrier and Lennox. But there's a material price difference between the two. One net of the rebates would be about $10,000, and the other would be about $7,000. So Carrier being $7,000 and Lennox being $10,000. Based on the limited research I could do, it seems like Carrier parts later on seem to be easier to find, as well as there's more technicians that understand Carrier. So I'm just curious if you have any feedback on the brands or whether there's different HVAC systems I should be looking at, that kind of thing.
Well, actually, thanks to one of our listeners a couple of weeks ago that reached out to me and explained the way how the rebates are happening as far as heat pumps are concerned. And I did some research on my own. It's actually true. So the good news in all of this is most of the research, believe it or not, in this case, is done by the government when they're giving you the grant, because they do research on the efficiency of the unit, and the rebate is attached to that. So to simplify matters for the homeowners, the units that are getting more rebate, that means they're more efficient. So that should make your decision easier. Now, the other part of your question, Sean, about the Lennox and the Carrier, the good news for you is they're both very common machines or brands. So yes, Carrier is more common. It's more installed. So, you know, it's not an issue. But Lennox is not one of these niches either. So it is considered still a widely spread unit or brand. So I don't think it's going to be as much. I mean, if typically who you want to service is a distributor that you hire. So the way it works is very simple. Usually most distributors, most HVAC companies, they have more than one, they carry more than one brand. They distribute two to four depending on the demands of the clients. And you just need very simply to reach out for a Lennox dealer. I don't agree with the part about the availability of parts. Lennox, we never had a problem in the past getting parts, because it is a very popular brand as well in Quebec. So it might be true to other markets. When we do research, we always have to understand the markets we're doing research in. So other markets might have less of that brand, but in the Quebec market, it's fairly popular.
Perfect. And maybe one final question. The units, they sell them, there are box-like units, and then there's those thinner units that fit on their side. And obviously, the box-like units, from what I've been told by one of the vendors, is a more stable or long, has more longevity. Do you have an opinion on that?
That is incorrect. I don't agree with that. I don't agree with that. There's no science behind that. So it's, if he's selling box units, that's what he's trying to push. But no, I've a lot of the higher ends have linear units, and you know they're. You pay double and triple as much in certain cases for them. So if that's the case, that wouldn't have been the design that they would have introduced.
Fantastic. Thank you so much.
The only difference that that will make for you, if you are putting it in front of a window, the boxy unit typically are shorter, so that becomes more an aesthetic thing, not to block your view. But from a practicality perspective, I don't see a big difference.
All right, Sean, thanks so much for the call. That is Sean calling in on the line here for the Home Improvement Show, which is 514-790-0800. We are going to take a quick break and we'll be back with Walter Assey. This is the Home Improvement Show. Good morning and welcome back to the Home Improvement Show. I'm Sue Smith with Walter Assey, who is answering your questions on how to improve your home. 514-790-0800. Let's get straight to the lines. Phil, you've been very patient. Hello.
Good morning, Sue.
Hi.
Morning, Walter. And Walter, congrats on the Renovco Plumbing initiative.
Oh, thank you, Phil. Really, I appreciate it.
Quick question on asphalt shingles. What is a acceptable degradation, if that's a real word. So I look at my gutters, and I have, you know, particulate from the shingles, which are 3 years old. Is that normal, or because I've got a flash in my head because I bought BP 15 years ago, and those were like terrible, and so I'm just wondering what is standard that I should see in the gutters.
Okay, before I answer this question, when you installed or replaced the shingle, when was the last time you cleaned your gutters?
I do it kind of yearly because I've got some spruce trees that have the cocut, you know, that come inside. So I clean those out. It's really only on one side.
Okay, so typically when you install a new roof, the particulate is kind of normal the first couple of years. So you will have a bit of shingle residue, if you wish, okay? I'm not really worried about that. What I do worry about is, and it's, I'm not also worried about the BP, because the BP then was tar-based, then they realized their mistake, and they are all fiberglass-based now. So it's not, it should not be a problem with the material itself. That I don't worry about. There's no recalls at all that I'm actually aware of on the BP end of things. So that I you could eliminate that, especially on 3 years. Now 3 years would have heard something if there would have been a recall. So that's not really the case. What you want to look for is curling, cupping, and you know, any signs of shrinkage. That's when you start really worrying. So it's when the shingle is discoloring in a way that is premature and changing its shape, delaminating its shape. That's when you start worrying. Beside that, normal wear and tear, it's less of a problem to worry about.
Okay, so when I do see particulate in the gutter, that, okay, yeah, don't freak out. It's standard.
It's just a residue, probably very highly likely from the installation. That's usually, especially like the first period of time that there will be, you know, with the snow melting, it, you know, it takes more residue for it. So really, it's common in your roof. I'm not saying there's nothing wrong with your roof. What I'm saying is it's nothing. I've seen it before. It's nothing to worry about. Delamination is where you start worrying. This premature discoloration. So if you look from far on your roof and you see that you have different color patches, then there must be something going on that we need to investigate more. Where I worry a lot more, if I see that there are shingles flying off, that becomes an installation issue more than a material issue. That means just didn't put enough nails in the shingle. And that's common from an installation perspective.
Okay, excellent. And you mentioned about, so I know curling, I know what that is, but you said shrinkage. What would be a visual of shrinkage?
So shrinkage is when you start seeing if you want the underlayment of where the shingle was nailed, they're not butting to each other. So the shingles have to kind of overlap. And when you see that there is a separation in that overlap, That's what we call shrinkage.
Okay.
Well, in extreme cases, extreme cases, you will see the plywood, but that's really an older structure.
Yeah, I don't want that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Hey, thank you very, very much.
Always a pleasure, sir. Always a pleasure.
Take care.
Okay, that's all the time that we have for phone calls, Walter, but we do have a couple of questions that have come in. I don't know if you have time to answer them, but Maggie wants to know how to get rid of water stains on red bricks.
Okay, so I mean, I'm just going to give her a couple of quick tricks that are homemade. Five part water, one part vinegar.
Oh, old wives' method.
That's right. And what you do is you spray it with water first, then you put the solution, then you rinse it with water. If that doesn't work, you can do it, you kind of change up from that method to a dish soap method with water. If that doesn't work, then you move on to the muriatic acid, and that's like my last resort because okay. It's, you know, the fumes and everything. But be very careful. It's 1/10 muriatic acid and 10 part water. So for every 10 glasses of water, 1 glass of muriatic acid.
All right. Well, let's try the vinegar first.
Vinegar and then the dish soap solution, yeah.
Okay, there you go, Maggie. Question to remove water stains from your red bricks. That's all the time we have for the Home Improvement Show. Thank you once again, Walter.
It's been a pleasure, Sue, to work with you.
Yeah, it's been great to work with you, too. Yes, Joanne will be back next week. But if you have a burning question that you need to ask Walter, in the meantime, you can go to the Renovco website and press the Ask Walter button. He promises to get to most of them eventually. Right?
I do, definitely do.
All right. You're listening to CJD.